Welcome to the Birthful Podcast. I'm Adriana Lozada, and today's birth story is with Jenny Murphy. Jenny spent much of her pregnancy learning about every worst-case birth scenario, not knowing all the new possible things to worry about that a pandemic would provide. Then life surprised her even more by giving her the dream birth experience she didn't think she could have. Stay tuned. This episode of Birthful is brought to you by the National Birth Equity Collaborative, creating solutions that optimize Black maternal and infant health through training, policy advocacy, research, and community-centered collaboration. Learn more at birthequity.org. This episode of Birthful is also brought to you by the Black Mamas Matter Alliance, a Black women-led cross-sectoral alliance centering Black mamas to advocate, drive research, build power, and shift culture for Black maternal health rights and justice. Learn more at blackmamasmatter.org. The Birthful Podcast, talking to maternity pros and new parents to inform your intuition. Hello, mighty parents and parents-to-be. Thank you for joining me for this episode of Birthful. And for all the love you give the show, I truly appreciate it. And your comments and your reviews and sharing it with your friends, that is all fabulous and awesome. For this episode, I am donating the sponsorship spots again to two wonderful organizations worth supporting, and they are the National Birth Equity Collaborative and the Black Mamas Matter Alliance. Please follow them and give them some of your time, goods, or funds if you can. Now, heads up that I have a birth prep online class series starting Monday, July 6th, and these classes are based on the tried and true activities that I do with my doula clients during prenatal meetings to make labor flow. And if labor flows, then there are fewer interventions and things are easier and they go quicker. And we do all that by focusing on ways that you can support your physiology. And there's stuff that you could be doing now during pregnancy to help support your birth physiology. So the classes are made up of a mix of recorded videos, live portions, worksheets, and activities spread out over a 3-week period. So if you are expecting your baby, say, late summer or early fall, then go register right away because classes start July 6th. And you can find all this information along with information about my online postpartum preparation classes at birthfulcourses.com. And there's even a lovely package where you save a bunch of money if you sign up for both classes together. Also, in an effort to provide more access to great childbirth education, I am saving 2 seats in the class that is starting July 6th for those who would love to take the class but truly cannot afford it, with priority being given to Black, Latinx, or Indigenous and other parents to be of color. So if this is something that would make the difference between you taking the class and not taking it, then send an email to info@birthful.com with the subject line scholarship to apply for a spot. All right. So as I mentioned during the last episode, I am about to take the first podcast pause in 5 years, and I did realize that stopping with so little warning was a bit abrupt. So I am leaving you with 2 wonderful birth stories to tie you over until September. The first one is the story we're going to be listening to today, and it's an amazing hospital birth with Jenny Murphy. And when Jenny heard that I was looking for stories during the pandemic, she wanted to share hers to basically shine some light and positivity on the many things that can go right, even with the new hospital policy changes. So I am excited to hear all about it. Let's get to it. Jenny, welcome to the show. I am so happy to have you here.
Thank you so much, Adriana.
Yeah, and congratulations. I hear your baby boy is 4.5 weeks.
He is. He's changing and growing lots every day. So it's been really special to watch him.
Mm-hmm. Are you feeling you're settling into that early postpartum, finding a rhythm?
I think so. I mean, every day is different for sure. And I'm learning that babies are very unpredictable. But we're taking a newborn sleep class right now, which has been helpful. So starting to get in the flow.
Excellent. Good to hear it. Well, we know about your son and how things are going a little bit now. What else can you share about yourself? Tell us a little bit.
Yeah, I'm 29 and my husband and I live in the Bay Area. We live in Oakland. His name's Frank and we live with our son Phoenix. I'm a technical recruiter by trade, so I work professionally with like Bay Area startups that are mission driven and high growth to help them scale. And my husband's in construction.
Cool. So it seems like you have a mindset of being organized and ducks in a row. Or am I
Kind
assuming
of. I don't
that?
know. I was just thinking about this the other day. I'm not sure if I'm a type A personality or type B, go with the flow. I think I kind of go in between both.
That sounds like a good balance. So let's take you back over a year ago when you were first pregnant and preparing for birth. What were your feelings? Where was your mindset at with that?
Yeah, so I think my birth story, kind of to back up, starts with my experience and perspective on birth and pregnancy in general. So this time last year in May, my brother and sister-in-law were expecting a baby. Her name was Aurora. She's my niece, and she was stillborn. And so my perspective starts there. It was obviously a really tough time for our family. And our, you know, she's my niece. She was the first grandchild that our family was expecting. So it was really tough on everyone. And for me, that kind of spurred a lot of trauma, I think, when thinking about birth and having kids. And to be honest, I wasn't planning on it in the near future. So when I got pregnant, it was a little unexpected. It was 2 months before I got married, actually. So I was in the middle of planning a wedding. And there was a lot of unknowns, and it kind of caught us off guard. But my husband and I have always wanted a family. We were engaged for 2 years. We've been together for almost a decade. And so it's something that we were ultimately really excited about. But I also got pregnant just a few months after that happened. So there was a lot of fear, to be honest, and a lot of wanting to make sure that I was educated on labor and pregnancy, and that I had like a solid support team behind me to feel safe, you know, getting ready to go on this journey.
Yeah, and I'm so sorry to hear about your niece. Yeah, that's gotta be hard for everybody. Did you feel also, was there any feelings of ambivalence between everybody else having that big loss, and you yourself, like having going through that big loss, and how to balance that with the joy and emotions you were having around being pregnant and starting to get into the mindset of welcoming your own child.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think there still is, to be honest. It, you know, grieving for my brother and my sister-in-law and everyone kind of grieving and then finding out I was pregnant, there's some guilt, to be honest, and a little shame. Because I knew that they were also trying to have another baby and wanting that for them and wanting, you know, wanting like the best for them and wanting them to feel better, but also being pregnant and wanting to be happy for me too, while still grieving the loss of my niece. So there definitely was that. There was that for sure, and there still is. But I'm really happy to say that I'm expecting a nephew actually next week. And so our family like went through a lot. But I think came together very closely just through clear communication, and also boundary setting. Like my brother and my sister-in-law were really intentional about their healing and their support system to feel good about grieving for the loss of their daughter. And so there were boundaries set in place with me too, and sharing as a family, and how do we get through this together with so many different mixed emotions.
And that is commendable and admirable because it, those feelings are there. It's a tough situation, right? It's only normal, but the fact that you guys were into open to being vulnerable and communicating and setting boundaries and really talking about it and hearing each other out and being there for each other, that's huge. That is all of, that is everything, basically.
Absolutely. They're incredible. And it's so important when your family goes through something like that. My brother and I are so close that you have that openness and are able to say things that, that may be uncomfortable, and be okay to be comfortable being uncomfortable, for sure.
And that is definitely the space where birth happens, in being comfortable with being uncomfortable. I think that's like the tagline mission of doulas, right? Of being able to go into these spaces and know how important it is to just hold that space and explore it together. So you were pregnant. You mentioned you were having a lot of fear also in terms of what would happen. In your experience and your journey, what did you do to face that fear or deal with it?
There's a lot of fear for the safety of my baby, and knowing that he would be in good hands and be healthy. But what I did was I made the decision, I want to have a really strong support team. And so my husband and I invested in a company called Golden Oak Midwives, and they're a group of midwives, and they work within the hospital, but they're like a separate entity. So they didn't accept insurance, but we made an investment to work with them because of their great reviews, and through word of mouth, we heard really great things about the way that they approach pregnancy and birth, which were aligned with what we wanted. And having an empowered birth experience, and having it be really high touch and hands-on. We also considered working with a doula, although we ended up not pulling the trigger until the day I was in labor, which we can get into later. And then education, like really educating myself on labor and pregnancy. It's a really big learning curve, I learned. I didn't know anything about it, but I kind of became fascinated by it. And some of that fear was probably led by me researching a lot. But I listened to a lot of podcasts. I listened to your podcast every day walking to work. I read books and really just became immersed in birth for the 9 months I was pregnant.
What are some books that were really helpful to you?
So a book, Nurture, was really helpful to me. The author, I believe she's a doula based out of LA, Erica Chidi Cohen. And it's a guide to pregnancy and birth, and really intuition led. So I found that to be really helpful. And it also includes mindfulness practices. So little meditations you can do based on the month you're pregnant, and a checklist that you can kind of check off each month as well. And then my partner and I read together The Birth Partner. And that is from the birth partner's perspective. And so that helped us prepare more logistically for these are the things that you can expect in labor. I also started to read a hypnobirthing book, but I'll be honest, I got 2 pages in, and I couldn't follow along with it. I think the format of a book for breathing exercises was hard for me to, I guess, follow. And that's pretty much it.
And I will link on the show notes to those books. I love all of them. I love the book Nurture, and it seems like you were already getting the mindfulness part of it through that book that, hypnobirthing, maybe you were already getting what hypnobirthing would give you to an extent from the book Nurture. And then the birth partner book is from Penny Simkins, who's like the doula of all doulas.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So then you were doing your research, reading the books, listening to podcasts. Did you do any childbirth education classes?
We did. Yes, we did an in-person class that was locally based, and that we did about three of the classes in person, and then it switched to being online via Zoom once the COVID restrictions and shelter in place happened.
So tell me a little bit about how sheltering in place and COVID affected your plans.
Yeah, so my baby shower was actually the day before shelter in place was instituted in California. And so we had our baby shower. I would say about half of the people showed up because it was when things were starting to get serious, but the shelter in place wasn't instituted. So it was really eerie, to have half the people at your baby shower. Like half my family members were there. And then when we came up, the hospital infrastructure started to change. So I got an email from my midwife saying that our in-person weekly check-ins would be via telemedicine and online now. And I might have to buy like a blood pressure reader, and I need to send them a picture of my temperature before the appointment. And then I was told by my midwives that I would not be able to have a doula in person, that Frank, my husband, would not be able to leave the hospital room when we did give birth, and that we likely would have to wear masks during the time we were at the hospital. So we were kind of very quickly cued in to all the changes that were happening, and it seemed like it went from 0 to 100 within a week. And yeah, and then our birth class was moved to online. I went from working in person to working in home, so it was a lot of change, probably within like 1 to 2 weeks.
And I've heard from a lot of people that their anxiety just ramped up, right, with all those changes. How were you feeling?
Yeah, it definitely put me into like fight or flight mode. I definitely felt anxious, but it was also more like execution mode, if that makes sense. So instead of deeply feeling the anxiety, I was like, okay, like how do I make the most of this? And how do I grasp the changes that are about to happen? But yeah, there's definitely a lot of anxiety there for sure.
And what would you recommend to other people who are listening, who are pregnant and are having to, still figure out all these changes with COVID and how to manage those all those feelings and sort things out?
Yeah, I would say one, like have a birth vision for yourself. So it's kind of funny because in pregnancy, you talk a lot about your birth plan, right? And pretty much that's all out the window for any mom or soon to be mom that's pregnant. But what I would recommend and what I did is have a birth vision. Like, how do I want my birth to feel? And really cling to that because the external circumstances will likely change. But by the time you give birth, and they definitely did for me. And so, by creating a birth vision, I was able to still have that regardless of what changed. And so, I would take time to think about that. Obviously, there's the birth preferences, which you may or may not be able to have, but that vision of how you want to feel and the type of experience you want to have while in labor, you can still have. And so, to think about that, write it down if you can, talk about it with your birth partner and with your support team. It was alleviated a lot of the anxiety I had, and helped a lot.
And I love COVID or no COVID, always doing that with my doula clients of setting in first, writing out three words of how they want to feel. And both birthing person and their partner each have their own words, three words of how they want to feel. Because, like you said, circumstances, you have no idea what's going to happen, but you can control to an extent. The only thing you can control, I guess, is how you're going to show up. And so tuning into those feelings is huge, huge. I love that. Let's take a quick break. When we get back, I want to know what happened, how labor started. We'll be right back. The National Birth Equity Collaborative defines birth equity as the assurance of the conditions of optimal births for all people with a willingness to address racial and social inequities in a sustained effort. They work on optimizing Black birth outcomes through training, research, community-centered collaboration, and advocacy while uplifting Black women-led organizations and guiding clinicians and researchers to center women, their families, and their stories. Cultural transformation depends on the capacity for providers and systems to listen to, understand, and respond to community voices sharing stories of disrespectful and dismissive care and service gaps. By listening to Black women, trusting Black women, and responding to Black women, the National Birth Equity Collaborative is centering Black mothers' voices to drive birth equity. Learn more and lend your support at birthequity.org. And we're back talking with Jenny Murphy about her birth story. So I love that you were honing in on your birth vision and how you wanted to feel during birth. You also mentioned that as the day got closer, more things changed due to the COVID-19. What were some of those things?
Yeah, so some of those things were we actually had a doula in place that backed out. So that was one thing that we had a support person in place in terms of having a doula who was going to be in person and backed out. The other things that changed were in relation to hospital policies. So went from being able to have a doula to being able to only have one support person with you in the room. We were notified that we would not be able to leave the hospital room in labor or in postpartum. So before, when I did the tour at the hospital, they had like a little garden, and I pictured myself walking around, having contractions in the garden and being outside. And so that was no longer an option either. Another option is pain medications. So, for pain medications, no longer were able to use nitrous oxide, which is something that I was open to trying because I really didn't want an epidural.
Yeah, and I've heard similar recommendations in our neck of the woods. We're kind of there as well, and from other places in the States, of that being the case. Also, so in terms of pain medication, one of the options we have here is Nubain, which is an IV medicine, and that one, it comes from China, so there was limited supply, so that was also off the table for many people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And because things are changing so much still, I think now the changes aren't so drastic, but it's always good to, call to get an idea of hospital policy. But as you yourself experience, you've got to like call again and see as the date gets closer, what are the current considerations for your birth. Now you said you had a doula in place and that they backed out. What? Tell me more about that.
Yeah, so to be honest, like Frank and I were kind of debating whether we wanted a doula or not throughout the entire pregnancy. It's something that I think we definitely wanted, but it was more a cost thing. We already invested money in having a strong support system on the midwife side, and they didn't accept insurance. So that to us was a big investment. And so on top of that, when we learned about the prices for doulas in the Bay Area, it was pretty steep for us. And and for what we were comfortable paying. So we were going back and forth about it a lot. And then finally, we found a doula that was within our budget, which was great. But we had an agreement with that doula that at any point, she would reserve 2 weeks before and after my due date. But at any point before that, she or I could back out of that agreement. And with that risk comes a better price or a price that is a little bit lower than the other services she offers. And so after, I think maybe right after my baby shower, she let us know that she found another client that was willing to pay more. So ultimately, like, I was at peace with it. It just didn't work out. And to be honest, I think that during some of our conversations, there wasn't a super strong connection, but what we wanted to optimize for was knowing when it was safe to go to the hospital while still staying in my home for as long as we could, because I didn't want my labor to slow down. I've heard that happening. I've heard stories from your podcast about that happening when you go to the hospital, things slowing down. So really wanted to optimize for those two things, and so we moved forward. But ultimately, I'm glad it didn't work out. We found someone that I had a much stronger connection with. And yeah, that's pretty much what happened in a nutshell.
And you said at the beginning that that person, you found them like the day you were going into labor. I want to know more. What was that?
Yeah, so we didn't find them, but we finalized the agreement the day I was in labor. And it's a really funny story because I had gone to prenatal yoga a lot when I was in the early and middle stages of pregnancy before COVID. And my midwife, when I told her that we had our doula back out, recommended that I reach out to someone named Lenora. And Lenora, I Googled her, and it happened to be the my yoga instructor that I had already like kind of had a relationship with, and that I was familiar with since I'd been going to her yoga classes. So I reached out to her, I want to say maybe 1 week or 2 weeks before I gave birth. And then I notified her when I went to the hospital. I had to go to triage to see if my water was leaking, and it was. And so we were in the midst of working out the agreement. I went into labor 2 weeks before I was due. And so I ended up like signing the agreement before, just a few hours before she came over to my house. But we already had a little bit of a relationship. Although I never talked to her one-on-one, I felt like I knew her from the yoga classes.
She was already a comfort for to you, I'm guessing.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So tell me, how did things start?
Yeah, so things started, I think, about a week before I gave birth. I noticed that I was having a little bit of leaking, and I thought I was having some incontinence. So I would sneeze, and like a little trickle of liquid would come out, or I would be walking, and some would leak out. And so, because I was already extra cautious, I would call my midwives every time it happened. And we thought it was incontinence because it was only a little bit of liquid. But every time they offered me to go to triage, and they said, look, if you're feeling uncomfortable, go to triage. It may be just some pelvic floor weakness, but it also could be some amniotic fluid leaking. But each time, I just really wanted to avoid going to the hospital because of everything happening with COVID. So I was kind of trying to put it off. And on April 15th, I woke up and I went to the restroom, and there was some blood in my urine. So I called my midwife. I sent her a photo of it, and she said, let's get you to triage as soon as possible. So I called my husband, and we were on the way to the hospital at around 10 a.m., where then they did a check to see if my amniotic fluid was leaking or my membranes had ruptured, and they had. So they gave me two options, or my midwife did. She said, "We really need to get things going with your labor. So we want to have you try a castor oil smoothie. If that does not work by tonight, then tomorrow morning you'll be induced." So went to the CVS, got castor oil, made like an almond banana shake with castor oil in it. And I had that, I think around 1 p.m. And then things started really progressing.
And when they check that to see if your membranes had ruptured, did they do a vaginal check to assess your cervix at all or no?
They did, yes.
Do you remember what you were at?
Oh, so they didn't check. I don't think they checked my cervix. They put a Q-tip inside my vagina to test the fluid. But I wasn't told if I was dilated or not.
Okay. Now, you said the midwife wanted to get things going right away. Was there some sort of, what was the reasoning behind that recommendation of getting things going as soon as possible?
I think just connecting the dots of like, because I potentially was leaking for about a week prior, I think just wanting to get labor going safely was the recommendation, because I'm not sure, so maybe you can tell me. It can be dangerous to not have contractions or go into labor if your fluid is leaking or if your membranes have been ruptured.
So the concern is infection. Usually it's that's not amnesis, but it's the shorthand for it is chorio, is a type of bacteria, and that is the risk of infection that if it can cause harm to baby. And so after 24 hours, the thought is the rate of infection increases. So ideally, they're looking to have baby born by then. But
Okay.
as you experience yourself, you potentially can go for a week without having any signs of infection. And monitoring the biggest thing there is trying to keep, nothing in the vagina, keep everything clean, wipe front to back, use clean towels, monitor your temperature. Like those are great recommendations that you can do yourself in terms of minimizing infection and monitoring yourself, but of course, provide a recommendation, and your conversation with them comes first in terms of informed choice. What the research also says is within 24 hours, I want to say, I think it's within 12 hours of waters rupturing, 80% of pregnant people go into labor on their own. And I think it's between 24 hours, it's 90 something. I'll link it on the show notes. I don't remember the percentages, but pretty much everybody within 24 hours of their water rupturing prematurely, pre-labor, go into contractions start and they go into labor. Like you experienced, though, not always the case, but it seems like you had maybe a high leak that was more of a trickle and might have been closing up.
Yeah, that's actually what they thought they mentioned too. So it was the castor oil or like being medically induced at that point,
So you
which was
had,
scary.
oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying, which was a little scary because I really didn't want to be medically induced.
And, but it seems you're saying the almond smoothie, castor oil smoothie worked really well and contractions started pretty quickly after that.
Yeah, so I took the castor oil smoothie around 1:30 p.m. And then I think I like watched a TV show. I did a little birth meditation. I took a shower, had some avocado toast and bone broth. And then at probably between 1:30 and 3, like an hour after, things started to become a little not powerful or intense, but I definitely could feel that something was happening.
Let's take a break before you get into the real meat of this story, because I don't want to interrupt you then. But I want to know, like, when did you tune in your midwife and all this, because you said you were concerned about once you go to the hospital. We'll be right back. The Black Mamas Matter Alliance is a Black women-led cross-sectoral alliance that centers Black mamas to advocate, drive research, build power, and shift culture for Black maternal health, rights, and justice. Their goals are to change policy, cultivate research, shift culture, and advance care for Black mamas by addressing Black maternal health inequities to improve Black maternal health outcomes while elevating the talent and knowledge that exists in Black communities, redirecting and reframing the conversation on Black maternal health, and amplifying the voices of Black mamas. Learn, connect, and donate at blackmamasmatter.org. And we're back. So things are starting to happen. It's around 3 p.m. You did a beautiful meditation. You had avocado toast and bone broth. You've nourished yourself. Did you take a nap as well?
I tried to. But I think the birth meditation, it was kind of like a little nap, but I wasn't full on sleeping, just because I knew what was about to happen. So kind of the thought of that happening or what was about to happen kept me from taking a nap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, understandable. So you felt that things were starting to happen. Did you then reach out to midwives and doula or not quite yet?
So not quite yet. Around 3 p.m. I did. And my midwife called and checked in with me probably around 2. And I asked her, like, hey, when should I check in with our doula? And she said, check in with the doula when things are starting to feel like not that you don't have control, but they're starting to feel a little bit like, what do I do? And that was really good advice, because at that point I started feeling contractions. I was kind of starting to move around our apartment. And time started to be a little bit like blurry, but it wasn't really powerful and the contractions weren't happening super fast. I think they're probably like 5 to 10 minutes apart. So that advice was good, because once things started to pick up, I did start to feel like, oh, what do I do? And that's when we called her. So we checked in with her around 3 p.m. when things were getting more active.
Mm-hmm. And what did you want her to come over or what happened next?
Yeah. So at that point, I don't think I talked to her. My husband, Frank, did. And he said to her, like, Jenny's things are getting more serious, but Jenny's in the flow. And so I, to be honest, don't have a lot of memory of that time. But from what I remember and what he told me, that's when I was really starting to move a lot and starting to make noises. We didn't have her come over until about 5:45. And he was kind of monitoring that and the person to say, like, okay, she should come over.
Mm-hmm. What was cueing him in to say, okay, now it's time?
I think he was timing contractions, not super seriously, but just keeping an eye on it. And then I think him just being in tune with me, and communicating with me. I, during the birth, would say he's very much an observer and observing me and my behaviors and probably the noises, like when the noises started to get more loud and I think grunty. I don't know how to describe them. They're kind of like very primal. So when they started to get more primal, I think I started squatting more, doing more movements, and breathing heavier, moving maybe faster. Those were some signals that cued him to call her and tell her to come over.
Mm-hmm. And I love the way you're saying that the sounds are more primal, because they are. They just come kind of guttural. Yeah.
Yeah, they definitely do.
So what happened next?
So around 5:45, Lenora came over. And the contractions were definitely getting more powerful. It was hard to like stay still. It was hard to lay down. I remember telling when she came in the door, like telling her, like, I just can't catch a break. It's not that it was painful. It's that it was so powerful and I felt super tired. Like I just wanted to take like a minute or two nap, but then another contraction would come. So at that point, they may have been like 1 to 2 minutes apart. When she came, I will note another difference was she was wearing a mask the whole time. So her and Frank were wearing a mask, and that was something we agreed upon, that would happen while we were at home laboring because she did assist me at home and was hands-on. So she was wearing a mask and gloves, but I was able to not wear a mask, which was nice because of all the heavy breathing.
And so go ahead. What happened next?
Yeah, so I would say like from 5:45 to around 8 was definitely active labor. She came in, she had a rebozo, she had some ginger tea, which was like amazing, ginger turmeric tea. And she set up in our one bedroom apartment. We have a really small apartment, but we made it work. She set up some pillows and like a little stool. We had the rebozo around the door. And pretty much during that time, I was going from our living room to our bedroom to the bathroom. And like every time I had a contraction, I almost moved to a different room. And that really kind of, I don't know why, but it helped me kind of get in a flow, and be able to handle the contractions. So, we had like little stations set up almost. And so I'd hang on the rebozo a couple times. I'd be on the floor with her through a contraction, and she would walk me through breathing, remind me to breathe. She would give me a massage. We put essential oils and in a couple diffusers around the apartment, lit a candle, and really just like set this space up to be really comfy and how I wanted, like what my vision was for it. And then kind of just did our thing. And my body really just knew what to do. And that's something that surprised me, but that I heard about in your podcast and through my research, like I think you mentioned when you become pregnant, your body doesn't think about, okay, I'm 1 month pregnant, I'm 2 months pregnant. You don't create your baby, your body does, right? And birth was very much like that for me. Like my body just knew what to do. My mind was out of the way. So that really helped me, and I didn't have to overthink or think about anything. It was just very intuitive.
Oh, and I love hearing that because you were just flowing with your physiology. I know you mentioned your husband said things are flowing. Those are words that I love because it's what you need to do. So I think your mindfulness and your meditation really helped to let you let go of the thinking. And I am in love with these stations that your doula and you created to get you into that rhythm of labor where you were. Yeah, going from one place to the other and moving and getting comfort. What do you think were the most helpful things that your doula was doing? Or your husband was doing? Like what helped you the most?
Yeah, I think that honestly, like them being there was really helpful, just knowing they were both there, but also not, I don't know how to say this better, but getting out of my way almost. Like I was leading my own labor, and my doula said that herself, like giving me the space that I needed to do what I needed to do, whether that was like make a really loud grunting noise or be in the shower or be on the toilet. We have a really small bathroom, and when things started to get really serious, I wanted to be alone. And so I literally closed the bathroom door and was backwards on the toilet, doing contractions and just giving me the space to do that. But having them present was so helpful, and just knowing if I needed support, they would be there. So when I did need support, I would come out and Lenora and Frank would both be there. But when I wanted to be alone, I could run away to the bedroom and they wouldn't, follow me. And so that was really helpful. Also, what was really helpful is like offering me food. They like set up that I had tea and I had some more bone broth and making sure like I was nourished, because that's definitely not something I was thinking about, but something that helped for sure, probably in sustaining my energy. And then having Lenora there, when I did talk to her initially about the type of birth I wanted it to be a spiritual birth. And I wanted to have some spirituality in that and it to feel special. And so she really brought that element into our space. And that was really special for me and really helped me through the labor, I think. And so she did a couple of things like calling my ancestors. So my grandma has 15 children, or had 15 children and gave birth to 11 of them. And I remember talking to my mom and telling her like, if grandma could have 11 kids, I can have one. Like I can do this. And so she did a little ceremony and brought in my ancestors and reminded me and told me like, you can do this. Your ancestors are with you. And that was really special to me. Also, eye contact was really important in knowing that somebody sees what I'm going through and giving me the confidence to move forward and knowing that I'm safe.
So what happened? When did you feel like we should go to the hospital, or did you feel that? Who initiated that?
I definitely felt that. I felt the urge to push. So when I think around 8 p.m., I started feeling like I needed to push. And I went to the little bathroom and I remember like being on the toilet backwards. And just like, I don't know why I did that. I never heard about that before, but it felt really good to be on the toilet backwards. And I just had to push. So I started like having really grunty kind of pushing noises and feeling like that. And then I got into the shower and my husband was there with me. And I started kind of having contractions that felt really intense and like pushing, like I would have to squat when I had them. The noises got a lot louder. And I asked my midwife, like, when do I know, or when will I know I need to go? And at that point, I think she was making a call on intuition. And she said, like, you'll know, because I don't think we were exactly timing contractions right. But shortly after that, I knew. I just kind of knew that I needed to go, and that we should be on the way. So with the support of my doula, and she was in communication with my midwife as well, we were going off of kind of timing and intuition.
So how was the car? How far away were you guys? And how was the car ride? And then did things slow down when you got there? How was the triage? And yeah.
Yeah, so the car ride was 12 minutes. And I would say it was originally the plan was for our midwife to not be in the car with us. So we would part ways after the car. So essentially, like she was not going to be in the car ride with us. And I asked her to come with us when we were getting ready to go, because I felt like I wanted her support there.
You meant
So,
your doula, not your midwife?
oh, sorry. Yes, my
Yeah,
doula.
I just got really confused for a second. I'm like, wait a second.
My midwife is not there, the doula. And so the car ride was interesting. It was definitely hard. I think I probably had three or four contractions in that car ride, and it felt like we were going from, the safe space of our home, being in a rhythm, to being in a completely different environment, and still having those contractions. So my doula said that she kept trying to like keep me kind of in it. I think I noticed like the cars outside and that everything looked empty when we were driving on the street. And I said something to my husband and the doula, and my doula kept trying to talk to me from the back of the car and keep me within my flow and within like labor land, essentially. So it was this kind of juxtaposition of my mind coming back into play a little bit and thinking, versus being fully in labor.
So then, once you got to the hospital, what happened?
So once we got to the hospital, I was, I think, fully pushing. Like I definitely had to squat in the parking lot and do contractions. And we met with our midwife at the front. My doula did like one last contraction with me, and then I got on a wheelchair. And I sat, it was one of those wheelchairs that you can actually squat on. So I was like sitting backwards on it and squatting. And they wheeled me in. They took both of our temperatures. So my husband and I's temperature. I said bye to the doula, and we were on our way, and we went right to the labor room. And at that point, I heard my midwife say, like, she's fully dilated, you know, she's ready to go. So I think I quickly changed into like a hospital gown, and I was actually pushing and squatting like on the hospital floor, like I wasn't on the bed. So my midwife said, Jenny, why don't you get on the bed? Things will be probably a lot more comfortable for you there, and you can still squat and be backwards. So I squatted and I was backwards, and my husband was looking at me and holding my hands when I was pushing. And then they put a monitor on me to monitor the baby's heart, and that was pretty much it. I didn't have any like needles in me or IVs. It was just the heart monitor, and me pushing.
So at this point, did you feel you were participating in that pushing, or it was just your body and baby doing it all?
Yeah, it was. I felt like I was participating at the point, I think, when I had right before the ring of fire. So my midwife started talking to me and really was just like, you're doing great. Keep doing what you're doing. And that was pretty involuntary. And then she started saying, okay, push like you're going to do a bowel movement, and coaching me a little bit. And that's when I felt the participation from me really came in. And it did kind of become like this team effort. So that I was an active participant in, for sure.
And not that you weren't, an active participant in all of it, because you weren't checked out. You were definitely in it. Yeah, but sometimes it just feels like I can't, this muscle's doing this thing and I can't stop it if I wanted to.
Yeah, totally. And it definitely was, but like her guidance and coaching on how to push was actually really helpful, during that time.
And so then you're feeling this, the ring of fire. She's coaching you to walk me through the birth of your baby.
Yeah, she was coaching me. She told me, like, Jenny, you're going to feel the ring of fire, which I've heard about from your podcast and many others. And so that was helpful. And her telling me like the stages of like, this is close and this is happening. And I remember during the last few pushes, I think I was pushing in total for about 40 minutes. I told my husband, Frank, I need peppermint oil because I really wanted to use my essential oils and I was feeling really tired. And so they scrambled to get my peppermint oil. I think they put some on the pillow. And honestly, that really helped like invigorate me, and felt really good. And I think I pushed a couple more times and my son was born. And they handed him to me through my legs because I was squatting backwards. And I remember just like picking him up and holding him and kind of being in shock. In awe that at what just happened, and he was born at 10:12 p.m. So in total, I got to the hospital around 9, and he was born about an hour after.
And all of this is not that long since you took, I guess, the castor oil smoothie, which is around
So
one
fast.
something, right? Yeah, things really got going.
Yeah, so fast. And I really like had no concept of time. So it could have been 36 hours or it could have been 12 or 10. I think you kind of like lose that in labor, or at least I did. So
It
really
can be,
interesting.
yeah. Time can be so fluid, such a construct when you're in labor. Yeah. Oh. And how were those first few hours with your baby? Was he alert, aware? How was breastfeeding?
Yeah, he I think looked right at me. He was crying, and then he like immediately stopped crying. And it was really special. I had a lot of fear also just in the birth, birthing the placenta, and then having my stomach rubbed after. I forgot the name of it, but I had heard that was uncomfortable. But having him in my arms while they were doing that made things a lot better. And I had some tearing, so that was a little painful. But again, like just having him look at me and look at my husband and just be with our family, like made it so much easier. So it was a really special time. We did the skin on skin. We did delayed cord clamping, and everything was just like perfect.
Sounds lovely, so lovely. And then during that whole time, was it similar to when you were in your apartment where you were the only one without mask and everybody else had masks on?
Yes, exactly.
Were there any other COVID-related differences in or policies at that for that? For the birth, aside from you guys went in and got your temperature checked and then having these masks.
Yeah, so we weren't allowed to leave the postpartum room, like I mentioned before, or the labor room, which wasn't, we were there for an hour pushing, so obviously that's not a big deal. But the postpartum part, we weren't allowed to leave, and they only gave us meals for me because I'm the one insured, right, and the patient. So that was tough. My husband ended up going a whole being able to go to Whole Foods, and I think they accepted like food delivery, but that was the only thing that was a little, that was a change, and that was a little hard because, he couldn't make a quick trip to like get a green juice if I wanted. We were confined to that space for 2 days.
Did he give you the option of early, why am I not thinking discharge, early discharge?
Yes, they did. So we would have been able to go after 24 hours. But at that point, we felt safe there. And I know a lot of women are choosing to get out of there as soon as possible, and it's a really personal choice. For us, we wanted to optimize for getting as much help as possible, for learning how to swaddle, for like spending time with our son uninterrupted, and we felt safe in the space. The hospital wasn't crowded either. It was pretty quiet. The labor and delivery is separated from everything else. So we opted to stay
How long
for
did you
2 days.
guys? 2 days. Okay. Yeah. How has the these four how have these 4 weeks been, this postpartum and COVID?
It's been a journey. I think that I prepared so much for pregnancy and I did not prepare for what comes after as much. So it's definitely, in general, just I think having a newborn is hard. So it's been hard, for sure, and a huge learning curve. And on top of that, not having family support or friends or being able to have people like what you want to have. You want to be able to see your family and have them adore your child and have them meet them, and so we haven't had that, and that's been tough. But with that and being isolated and it being just us two, it's also been a time to like learn how to be still. I think that my husband and I are used to go, 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 and having a baby that, and then COVID on top of that, kind of forces you to be still. And so, silver lining is that it's teaching me that right now, and I'm trying to embrace those small moments of like holding my son and learning how to swaddle and learning how to get him on a sleep schedule or teaching us how to get a little more sleep. It has been nice.
I love that phrase of postpartum being a time of learning to be still. That is so well put. That is exactly like the best approach for postpartum because you're discovering so many new things. Like you said, it's a steep learning curve. That's hard, but you can do hard things. It does get better. It goes up and down, and you'll find your rhythm for sure. It seems like you are already. Yeah.
Yeah.
How are you do? Are you breastfeeding? How's that going?
I am. I'm just now starting to get the hang of it, which is great. Before it was a big struggle, for sure. I think that my milk didn't come in for about almost a week after. And being a first-time mom, it was hard to know if my baby was getting enough milk because I couldn't physically like see it come out. And so he lost some weight, like all newborns do, but our pediatrician recommended that he get on formula. And so that scared us a little bit. We put him on formula the first week, and then we made the decision to see and invest in a lactation consultant, which was really helpful. So we ended up going back to the hospital when he was just a week old to go see a lactation consultant who weighed him and kind of just gave us reassurance that my milk would come in, that I am able to breastfeed and it's normal for a newborn to lose weight. So the first couple of weeks were hard and really time consuming. I did not realize how much time it takes to feed a baby, and that a feeding can take up to 45 minutes, and you feed them every 3 hours. But now we're getting the hang of it. Things are going more smoothly. My milk is coming a lot more. I'm able to pump and give him a bottle. So my husband's with my son right now, feeding him a bottle, which is great. I'm able to produce like more milk, and things are definitely a lot better.
Yay! I love it. So,
Yeah.
congratulations. Yeah. I'm going to link on. You just reminded me of how you think you have time, but time is so minimal when you have a newborn, how long things take. I'm going to link a video that I created called Why It's So Hard to Take a Shower When You Have a Newborn. And
Yes.
that's a great watch for anybody who is pregnant. Please do watch the video that's linked on the show notes. Jenny, what parting words do you have for the listeners? What do you want to make sure everybody knows about having a birth, especially in a time of COVID?
Yeah, I think I just want any pregnant person to know that you can still have the birth that you might not have the birth that you initially thought or wanted, and things and external circumstances will change and probably already have if you are pregnant and expecting. But again, just like having a birth vision and knowing how you want to feel at your birth is still possible, and your birth will still be beautiful. And I think for me, I like if you want to do an unmedicated birth, you can still do that. You are powerful and your body knows what to do. So please trust it and trust your intuition. Do your research and be prepared and then let go. And like my doula said, she said, like, be a leader in your own labor. And really trust that your body will know what to do and you know what's best for you and your baby.
I love it. Yes. let birth go and you flow and just follow it. Yeah, so good. Congratulations again, and thank you so much for sharing your story on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Mighty Ones, find the in-depth show notes for this episode at birthful.com, where you can also learn more about me, the show, send me messages, and more. Remember to check out my birth preparation online class series that starts Monday, July 6th. Go sign up at birthfulcourses.com to get you really birth ready. And if what you want to do is get ready for life with a newborn, then right there at birthfulcourses.com, you can find out about my Thrive with Your Newborn online postpartum preparation classes and those you want to take before baby arrives as well. So get to it. Let's get you birth and postpartum ready. This episode was produced by me and made possible by you and the amazing Birthful patrons. Please follow the National Birth Equity Collaborative and the Black Mamas Matter Alliance and consider giving them some of your time, goods, or funds if you can. The title song for this podcast is Vive Ace by Kevin McLeod, and the sponsorship song is Air Hockey Saloon by Chris Zabriskie. Find them both at freemusicarchive.org. And here is what Jenny had for breakfast.
Ooh, I had a granola parfait, or a chia seed granola parfait.
I'm Adriana Losada, talking to maternity pros and new parents to inform your intuition here at the Birthful Podcast. Thanks so very much for listening. This episode is copyright 2020 by Adriana Losada.